You sound good.
Sherry, you're actually the green-eyed monster. I'm a dear, sweet little innocent blue-eyed girl.
I want it all. I want everyone to have it all. Welcome, everyone, to this week's The Green-Eyed Monster. I hope you've all had a fabulous week. It's been an interesting one around these parts, and I think that Jillian will concur with that. Hi, Jillian.
Hi, Sherry. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Green-Eyed Monster. Yes, I concur, but the most exciting thing is our guest for today.
Fabulous.
I'm always so quick to want to jump to the guest, aren't I?
I know. It's so great, though, because this really is an exciting night. So go ahead. You give the intro.
Oh, we have the wonderful, marvelous Max Egan. Max, who's staying in Peru, who's just been in America, speaking at the, what's the name of it, Change Your Life or Open Your Mind, what's a conference, which Max will tell us. Max Egan, welcome to Green-Eyed Monster on American Freedom Radio.
Thank you, Jillian. Thank you, Sherry. The conference was the Free Your Mind Conference in Philadelphia.
Free Your Mind Conference. And I listened to that and I took some notes, Max, because you said some things that I'd really like to explore further along the way.
Okay, yeah, it was interesting. I was actually asleep for that conference. I'd been awake for 59 hours and I'd done 46 hours travel before I got there, and I arrived at the actual venue 45 minutes before I was due to go on stage a day after I was supposed to, because I'd arrived a day late. And, I arrived the day after I was supposed to. I went on time, but, I arrived in the venue 45 minutes before I was due to go on, just sort of walked on stage and did this presentation. I didn't even know what it was until I had listened to it back and watched the video and saw it, and thought it's actually not a bad presentation considering I was asleep.
That was very funny, because every now and then you actually almost did go into the hypnagogic state and you did comment on it. And, yeah, that was funny. I was wondering a lot about that conference, but I loved it. But the thing that I thought would be really good to open the show with is that you actually said in Lakesh, and you said, I try to show in every show I try to say in Lakesh. And would you like to open that as being one of your most important philosophies of your life? And then Sherry and I would like to get into ayahuasca and why it's a good idea and why you're helping so many people with it. And you know, just explore the effects of DMT.
Well, in Lakesh means I am another yourself. I finish every radio show with it. I believe it's important to treat other people as yourself. I mean, I fall out of that a lot. Half of the time I say it, I'm trying to remind myself, you know. I mean, I've been, you know, I tend to snap and get angry as much as everybody else does lately. I mean, it's there's a lot going on in the field. There's a lot of pressure, a lot of tension, a lot of people snapping, you know. But it's something that just reminds me and grounds me. And it's a way, you know, I believe if we lived our life in that way, then it would help things. It really would, you know. As far as ayahuasca goes, with ayahuasca, people, you know, it's got a bad rap. People think it's a hallucinogen, and people are going to South America for these, you know, hallucinogenic parties and all sorts of stuff. But it's not. It's an entheogen. It's a plant that will connect you with the spirit realm, connect you with the ancestors and all sorts of stuff like that, you know. And the reason people are doing it, and the reason the ayahuasca retreats exist, well, the reason they started, I mean, the reason the shaman even came out of the forest and started sharing this medicine with people was because people really need a crash course in reconnection to the world. You know, the natives in the forest, they realize they're facing an uphill battle trying to fight this system. You know, all these logging companies and palm oil and whatever else is coming along and destroying the habitat. And very soon these old ways are going to be lost. And if Western culture doesn't stop destroying the environment at such a rapid rate, we're simply not going to have a habitat that's going to sustain life. And the people in the forest know this, and so they've brought the medicine out of the forest to try to reconnect, you know, Western society to their connection to the earth, because it's by reestablishing that connection to the earth that maybe people will get motivated to want to stop it, stop what's going on. Now, we've had people come to the, you know, retreat and do ceremonies. There was one girl who came to a retreat I was staying at, and she came for the whole 10 days to do 4 ceremonies and the dieta and all this stuff. And she stayed, she did one ceremony. For the entire ceremony, she screamed her head off. And we found it very difficult to calm her down. And the reason, she told us the next day, the reason was because she, when she went into that realm, she connected with the spirits of the whales and the energy of the whales in the ocean. And she could feel what we're doing to them and what we were doing to the whales, and she could feel the emotion of the whales and how much we need to preserve these creatures. And she left the very next day and quit her job and became a ocean activist and joined Greenpeace and all this sort of stuff, and did started working to try to save the whales and stop all the pollution of the ocean. So you have people have huge life-changing experiences, you know, with this medicine, and people reconnect. There was one guy, he's got like $1 million in the bank. He runs a company. He's a CEO. He's got everything he needs. He's about 40 years old, and all he does is work. He came here, same thing, did one ceremony, and then went, oh, my God, I've got everything I will ever need to support my family, and all I'm doing is working to get money to support my family, which I've already got. And my wife desperately wants to be an artist. It's time that I sold the company, quit my job, and became a house husband, looked after the kids, and let my wife pursue her art career and supported her in that. And he was the same, did one ceremony, went home and changed his whole life and started giving to people and changing things. And, you know, that's what we do in these retreats is plant seeds with people, reconnect them to their self and reconnect them to the earth, and then they go back into society and they start making ripples and changing the way they live and changing the people around them. So it is important work, and it's a medicine. It's not a hallucinogen. It's not a drug. It's something that is very healing. Admittedly, it's not for everybody, and there are certain people who are, you know, abusing it. There is a certain amount of ayahuasca rock stars and stuff who sort of drink all the time. I mean, I personally haven't drank for over a year, and I often stay at a retreat, so, you know, but there are certain ayahuasca rock stars. There is a certain infection that's gotten into it, with people are running it too much like a business. They've forgotten what the real, you know, idea was and what the original intention was, which is to reconnect people as quickly as possible. So there is certain infections that have got into it, like everything, you know, the corporate
world. Well, to bring a light note in there, Max, I Googled ayahuasca, I did a fair bit of looking into different people on it, and I got ayahuasca with Hamish and Andy. Do you know Hamish and Andy, you know, the Australian comedians?
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't know what you're missing. If you don't... Even Sherry saw it. We won't stick there, but Hamish and Andy are Australian comedians who've been around a very long time, and they go off on hilarious adventures, like riding one of those lake bicycles with the big fat tire tractor bicycles over the ocean to Peru from somewhere else. They landed somewhere interesting. Anyway, they went up the Amazon and they took ayahuasca, but the way that all that really happened was that Andy wanted to secretly plank, but he didn't want Hamish to see him. He just wanted to do planking. So that's talking about people doing, and you could see the disappointment on the face of the shaman that Hamish, the other comedian, was keeping. They played Russian roulette with this game of ayahuasca, with this drink of ayahuasca. They took a lazy Susan, and one got took the ayahuasca and the other didn't, but didn't. Anyway, it's a long story, and I'm ruining this wonderful interview by trying to fill you in quickly on what happened.
No, it was great. It was a good example, because they were trying to show, but I think they just stopped it. Like, right as he started, Razzy started to throw up, why is it, if it's such a spiritual connection, which I totally get, why is it that they say people are going to throw up and poop their pants and all these other weird things? What is that about?
Well, you've got all sorts of toxins in your body from your lifestyle, and you've got certain things in there that just shouldn't be there, and ayahuasca will get rid of them. That's just the way it works. And I've had experiences like in my first ayahuasca ceremonies where I was purging and there was nothing coming out, and I was digging really deep, and all I was getting was just like the deepest bile you can imagine from the nether reaches of your stomach, and stuff that you wouldn't normally get out, you know, and you get it out. And if after you've done it, you feel so much better, you know, it's just to
was
get stuff
mesh?
That you can't normally get out. I know people that have coughed up incredibly dark, dark green bile, you know, from the deepest recesses of their stomach that you can't get out any other way. And I've found that even like entities and energetic connections and blockages and emotional blockages, you can purge these sorts of things through the symbolic purging. I mean, you're reaching to the never reaches of your stomach, but you can almost feel energies coming out of your mouth. And it's a weird thing. It may seem strange to people, but it's very, very cleansing. I mean, purging is very, very cleansing. And if you're taking a medicine that is designed to cleanse you, well, it's going to come out some way. And if it's going to find things in your body that are causing blockages, causing emotional blockages, you know, poisons, toxins, then it's going to want to get them out, you know.
So in a way, it's purification.
And
it
when
is.
You say emotional, okay, so I'd like to just, I don't want to like totally dive into this because I do want to go into a lot more of the spiritual side of different things that you're learning, but.
I want to stay with ayahuasca.
Yeah. Well, I want to find out about more. I mean, we all know there's a lot of information about ayahuasca. I bet you, I mean, I think that there's a lot more information out there. So the thing
Max
is
living in an ayahuasca community.
Well, I know, but I bet there's more. We'll find out.
Darling. We'll play. Okay. Keep going.
We'll find out.
We'll see where we go.
The emotional purging, and this is one of the things that I've heard, is that because, I mean, and I know we've talked about this before, but, you know, the work that I do with the cellular somatic system and the purging of the seed, like getting somebody to bring it to the consciousness, I mean, it almost sounds like DMT does this on a physical level, on a site, like it does it on every single level of the being, as opposed to just having to hit one at a time. Do you think that's an accurate?
Look, I couldn't really give you a rundown on DMT. Ayahuasca isn't really DMT. I mean, DMT is part of it. That opens up the pineal, enables you to see, you know, have the visions or see into the spirit realm. And literally, there are times when you're seeing into the spirit realm. But ayahuasca isn't really about the visuals. It's more about the inner work. The thing with ayahuasca is that you've got the kapi vine and the shakuna plant. The shakuna plant holds the DMT, and the kapi vine holds the spirit. The soul vine holds the spirit of ayahuasca. And that's a female spirit, and she guides you. She guides you through different aspects of yourself, and she'll peel away the layers of your personality like an onion and reveal the things to yourself that you really don't want to look at, and she'll show you how to heal them. Now, there's people that can purge by simply crying all night, just sit there blowing their eyes out all night or blowing their nose all night or and it comes out in all sorts of ways, sweating or whatever. There's just ways of getting these things out of your body. It's got to be a release of some kind, you know. But there has been people that have had incredibly profound experiences, life-changing experiences, you know. Ayahuasca will show you the parts of yourself
more.
You don't want to look at, and you've got to be prepared to embrace the shadow, or you know, it's just not going to work. There's going to be a plane flying over here in a second, so while you talk, I'll just mute my microphone so it doesn't disturb the listeners.
Well, what I'm interested in is the different ways in which people are purified, and I actually wish I'd had a pencil in my hand then to write a note, because by the time I got to ask the question, I've forgotten it. Sherry?
Yes?
Would you like to say what I was going to say? What I was going to ask? Can you read my mind for me, please?
Okay, let's see. So I think that some of the things that that Jillian and I had questions about before the show was, when living in a community that is like kind of what you're doing.
That's it. How do you support the people? You just said the people went through these things in different ways. And I'm wondering, you know, like the ones that, the videos that Sherry and I watched, we thought, well, they didn't really support that person too well when they freaked out. I hope Max does a better job of supporting the person when they freak out. Didn't we, Sherry?
Yeah, is that true? I mean, is it, but then I also, I thought about this too, and then I thought, well, if you did offer too much support, would that be hindering their experience?
That's what you said, yeah.
And so that's a good question. So what do you think of that, Max?
Well, there's a fine line. I mean, if you've got a room, the retreat that I frequent, the people that I know, that I stay at often, and like I say, when I'm staying there, I'm not staying there to do ceremony. I'm just friends of people. So, and I've actually helped out with a lot of ceremonies there. But
yes.
There'll be like maybe 14 people in the group doing the ceremonies, and there'll be, you know, 6 or 8 facilitators there helping. So, and if someone freaks out, I mean, obviously they're going to be disturbing the others. There's a back room we can take them to. We can calm them down. We can help them through any trauma they're going through if they need help. Sometimes they just need to be away from others in a quiet space. So, yeah, we're very much there for people. Even if someone's burping, there's someone straight with them for a tissue or changes their bucket straight away. I mean, it's all very, very looked after where I am.
Sounds
I mean,
like
there
it.
Are a lot of places that run it very much like a business. And
yeah.
Even though it's good, you know, and it's all sorts of stuff, it's very production line-ish. You know, where I stay, there's a real heart there. The people have a real heart, and they know the importance of the work they're doing. And they very, very much look after the guests. So
that's
there's
what
people
we thought, that's
in the
what
last
I,
retreat.
This is why I wanted. This is why I wanted to make that point, and you can bring that back to my original word. You know, Lakesh. I thought this is what I'm tying all that together. You know, I'm saying that you would not be at a place that didn't have. Because ayahuasca is like actually the unveiling of Lakesh, isn't it?
Well, yeah,
and
in like
when you have
yeah,
that
it's a really important thing for people, and it's a really important moment, and it's really important that they're looked after and that they're in a safe environment and that they feel comfortable. And, you know, there's nothing that's going to take advantage of them. I mean, it's just really important. These are life-changing experiences for people. And like, and this is just a good place, the place that I stayed. I mean, the people, the last group that was here, there was like 11 return guests on that group. So, because they just have so much love for this place and for the people who run it. So, it's a good thing, you know, but there's a lot of bad stuff. I mean, there's stuff going on in the United States I've been told about where they'll get like, you know, 60 people and take them to a place and there's a light show and they're playing Beatles music and pop music through a PA and stuff, you know, and it's like, oh my God. They're just destroying the medicine, destroying the message. And there's no facilitators for anyone and there's no shaman. And now with the shaman as well, I mean, they get Shipibo shaman come from 5-6 hours upriver, come in on a boat and sing these ikaros for the people at the group, you know. And the ikaros connect you. They connect you back to the earth. They connect you to the forest. They connect you to yourself. They tell you the story that you need to hear. The ikaros of the shaman are so powerful. And you don't get that in all of these, you know, big ayahuasca groups that are running in the United States and stuff. These things are obscene. I mean, and this is not what the medicine is about at all, you know.
That's right.
Do you think that where, because you said that you've witnessed a lot of this, you've had the experiences yourself, but in a lot of the discussions that I've heard and the things that you and I have talked about, is this a stepping stone? Is this a way for people? You said it was very life-changing for some people, but it seems like maybe it's so what comes after that?
Well, they've got to apply it to their lives. That's the thing. You know, people will do ceremony and think this is going to change my life, and by doing ceremony, I'm making a difference to the world. Well, you may be paying respect to creation, paying respect to the energies and all that sort of stuff, but the lessons that you learn in ceremony are for you to take on yourself and to apply to yourself and to use those things to apply to your community and to change the world. I mean, you know, it's one thing to do ceremony and think that by gaining all of this spiritual awareness, you're becoming a better person. But if you're not applying this knowledge directly to yourself and to the world that you live in, then what is the point of it? Now, like I said, I haven't drank for over a year. I mean, I've learned as much as I need to through ceremony. I know what the connection is now. I know where the blockages are. I know what needs to be done to try to change this world and how I need to apply myself to it. So I don't need to drink. You know, why continue to drink? Some people just, you know, abuse it. Like I say, there's too many ayahuasca rock stars who just go there and start to, you know, drink and tell people all about their fantastic experiences and how cool they are. And that's really not what it's about. It's about learning, you know, or reconnecting to this earth, learning what your connection is, reestablishing it and getting out there and making a difference, you know. Because, you know, really if you do ceremony and you see the truth and you see the truth of yourself and you feel the truth of your connection to this world and this life that this world gives us, you know, it all comes from the living things around us that we're destroying. You know, when you start to see that and connect with that, then you feel that you have to make a difference. You have to change your life. You have to do the right thing. I mean, I don't know how anybody who's done ayahuasca and really got the message could want to go and hurt somebody or something, or go and cut a forest down, or go and plant palm oil, or go and kill someone, or rape someone, or steal from somebody. I don't know how anyone could want to do that if they've done the medicine and really got the message and seen the truth of themselves and their truth of the connection they have to everybody. I don't know how they could do that. So it's life-changing. You know, like I said, with that guy gave up his whole company, sold his whole business, paid off all his debts, and became a house husband so his wife could pursue all of her dreams, you know. I mean, what a great thing. What a great thing to do, you know. And the girl who became a marine activist, you know, because she desperately sees how much we need to save the whales, and she felt the pain of them, you know. So these sorts of things are life-changing for people. I mean, some people don't learn. Some people need a few lessons. Some people have got to go in there and go deeper and deeper and deeper. Some people go there and it'll just be a pleasurable thing for them. They like the experience. And it may take them 5 or 10 or 15 ceremonies before they start to realize that, hang on, it's not just about seeing pretty colors and seeing into the spirit realm. There's actually deep inner work to be done here. Because if they get to that stage where they're starting to abuse it a little bit, the mother will usually take them really deep and show them a really dark side of themselves that they don't want to face. And that can be a pretty ugly time for them. You know, these are things that we have to see. We have to know.
Yeah.
Because that's how we can heal them. And she can show you the worst things about yourself and then go, well, it's okay. It's okay now. Now that you know it, it's okay. Because now that you know it, it gives you the opportunity to heal it. And it doesn't matter what you've done. It matters what you do from this point. You know?
Well, don't we all have both? I mean, that's kind of where I was kind of going with this, too, is it seems like if it's a clearing of emotional, allowing you to connect more into the spirit, more into the earth, and then also, I mean, it seems like it opens up purpose. You know, maybe this is something that is so lacking in our society, just like you were saying before, but it really I think in America especially, because even myself, DMT is available. I mean, you can actually, you know, you can buy DMT, but they don't do the ceremonial ayahuasca. You know, at least I'm sure that they do it here somewhere, but I'm not familiar with that. And
it sort of brings it back to authenticity, doesn't it? Like, it's about discovering your authentic self.
Well, it is. It's about reconnecting to your authentic self and really realizing what it is. But, I mean, like I said, I'm no authority on DMT. DMT just brings all your higher senses online. It's like getting shot out of a cannon, you know. There's none of this "I think it's coming on" stuff, you know. As soon as it hits your lungs, you're not in Kansas anymore. So, but there's no guide through it, you know. There's no guide. So ayahuasca is a whole different experience, and it's a really deep inner journey. And like I said, it's not even about the visuals. That's not what it's about at all. It's about learning who you are. You know, it's all a very, very internal stuff, ayahuasca, you know, and that's why it has so much benefit. And, that's why it's good for so many people. But like I said, sometimes it takes them a little time to get to that level, or, you know, get to the point where they are really doing the work. But, you know, it works for a lot of people. Some people it doesn't, but, you know, it's beneficial. It's not a drug. It's a medicine. That's the important thing for people to realize.
So what do the great medicine men in ayahuasca embody, and how do they, the shamans, you know, How important are they in the ayahuasca ceremony?
Oh, they're very important.
Yeah.
They're very important because they sing the Ikaro, and the Ikaro is what guides you through the ceremony. And without the Ikaro, there's no guidance. I mean, people can put music on, and the music is okay, and it will work. But if you've got an Ikaro, it just sings to you. There's this personal thing that happens. So the shaman arrives, he puts his energy into the medicine before the medicine, so he actually sings the medicine.
So you get the lineage.
Well, yeah, they sing into the medicine, and then they sing for the whole night, and they guide you through the process. And everybody who hears the shaman's song hears a message for himself in the shaman's song. Most people hear their own name in the song, as mm-hmm. if the shaman is singing directly to them. Mm-hmm. And they tend to repeat that Ikaro, and they really drum the message in, and sometimes it can get really uncomfortable, but it's something that you need to hear. You know, and you can hear the same Ikaro from the same shaman in another ceremony. It tells you a completely different message. But that's just the way it is. And everybody hears their own message. And it is very important to have the shaman there, I think.
Mm. Does the Ikaro have words? I mean, the words have meaning? And what's the meaning of the Ikaro words?
It's in Shipibo or either Shipibo or other, even Ketchin or something like that. Not words I can understand.
You haven't found a translation.
Well, no, that isn't important. It's the timbre of the words. It's the vowels.
The mantra.
They will form their own words for you, and you'll hear it differently every time when you're in the medicine. It wouldn't be the same if you could understand the words. If it was telling me a story, you know, Jack Frost went up the hill or whatever, you know.
Well, hang on a minute. If they're speaking a language that the locals speak, then for them it would have meaning. But what you're saying is your personal experience was the same as mine with Tibetan. It was actually like in a Tibetan puja with all the chanting. It just takes you into another space. And you're saying that these unknown, the meaning of them words to you, but the meaning of those words would be known to others who speak that language. Incredibly profound.
Is there a language or is it a vibration?
It's happening on all levels.
There would be very, very few people who would probably know the language of their singing, because I would believe it would be some higher form of Pibo or even some higher form of Ketchin. There's guys that we met in the forest who came and sat down that I've got dialogue I'm going to be using in the film. These old guys who came and sat down and pleaded with me and told me the story of the forest and why we needed to save it, and nobody could understand them. Even the people, even the Shipibo that I was with, could not tell me what these guys said, but you could see and feel the energy of their words, how much they were so pleased to see someone there with a camera and looking that I wanted to help with the forest, and you know,
sacred.
And you could see the in their eyes, just looking at you, just wanting you to help and telling you their story, but no one could translate it for me. So I don't know what half of these languages are. I mean, there's so many different tribes, you know, Kachinawa tribe, Yawinawa tribe, all these different tribes, all their different medicines, and they all have their own languages, which are all sort of derivations of higher Ketchin and higher Shipibo, and God knows, I mean, there's a lot of tribes in the forest, you know.
I
would think that, in my opinion, because I think a lot has to do with tone and vibration, especially when you're talking about the energies and the dimensional realms and our spiritual beings, I would think that it, especially if each person is hearing their own story, which would be a goal, that it would, again, it would have to do with tone, vibration, putting it out into a realm of that more as opposed to what it's actually, you know, has any kind of physical meaning.
Yeah.
And how?
There's some Ikaro you can see on YouTube. Like there's, I think, Mama Rosa or Maestro Rosa. She's a shaman that I've actually worked with. And you just hear the Ikaro, and they're very, very soulful. And, it's all... God knows what they're actually saying, but it's all the tonal, it's the vibration, it's the timbre of the voice, it's, you know, yeah.
Right.
It's a whole mental connection too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think
sorry, that's what I mean when I'm saying you get the lineage. You know what I mean? You get the transmission of the previous shamans experience.
Actually, there was actually one ceremony that I did, and I was away from the group, and I was in a spot where I could hear the jungle and hear the sounds of the jungle around me and the insects and the animals. I could still hear the shaman singing in the distance, and he appeared in the room, floating in the room in front of me. And I was just looking as clear as day, like 3D, like there was a real person. He was sitting floating in front of me, and then he turned into his father and his grandfather and his great grandfather, and he went right back through his entire lineage.
Wow.
And I had all sorts of other stuff happen as well. I had jaguar come in the room and lie on the end of the bed. I had some really interesting things, and I knew that there were spirits. I was seeing into the spirit realm because I could look away, and when I looked away and turned my attention away from them, they'd get up and they'd walk away. And then when I'd look back at them again, they'd come back and they'd lay down and they'd all sit around the end of my bed and they'd just sit there and they'd sort of talk to me, but talk to me by just moving an eyebrow, and I'd know exactly what they were trying to say to me and stuff like that. It was an amazing experience. So
that sounds very real, actually.
Well, I did all these tests. I thought, well, is this a hallucination? Because it's so vivid. So I closed my eyes and thought, well, now it's gone. I have to open my eyes to see it. So, okay, well, so I can see it with my eyes open. I'm in pitch dark. I can see all this with my eyes open. It won't matter if I pull my blanket over my head. My eyes will still be open. I'll still be able to see it. I pulled my blanket over my head, and all I could see was the blanket. I think looking at it, going, wow, what an incredible blanket, you know. But then I'm thinking, well, why can't I even see the blanket? It's really dark. You know? I should be able to still see this hallucination if that's what it is.
Yeah.
So I pulled the blanket off my head and saw that they'd all gotten up and they'd started to walk away. And then when I was looking at them again, they all came back again and sat down. And then I just thought, okay, well, I'm seeing into the spirit realm of some descript. And what I was seeing was blue people, like Avatar, like the people. Whoever made Avatar has done a lot of ayahuasca, because that is the world is like. In the world of ayahuasca, your higher senses come online. You're connecting energies. You're seeing energies. You can see the ground glows when you step on it. It's weird. I mean, you're walking through the forest and you get to a creek, and which is not really where you should be if you're doing ceremony. But you know, go across a little running brook and a pathway, and the rocks are talking to you, saying, "Here, I'll be a standing rock for you, and I'll be a branch you can hold." And they're kind of, you know, you're looking at these things normally when you're walking through the forest. You think, oh, I can grab that branch, I can grab this, I can step on that rock. And you're thinking it ahead. But as I'm walking through there in ceremony, it was like they were talking to me prior to me thinking that. So I didn't have to think it. It was like I could communicate with everything. You know, my theory is that there's this a substance called tryptophan, which is found in everything. You know, all the plants, everything's got tryptophan in it. And you've got tryptophan in you as well. And nobody really knows what it's for. I believe it's the antenna that reality uses to communicate with itself. It's how animals have instinct, because they're able to access the tryptophan and all the plants. The plants are able to access the world energetically. So people, you know, natives and plants and stuff, they know when there's a tsunami coming. They know when there's a storm coming, because they can feel the energies changing, because their higher senses are online. They can communicate through the tryptophan. When you have DMT, and DMT is like the interface that your body uses to access the tryptophan and everything else. So it gives you the ability to be able to communicate with the trees, the plants, the grasses, the higher realms that we don't really have access to. That's a lot of what happens, I think, with DMT. A lot of what happens with ayahuasca, you know, because we're only experiencing a very, very small percentage of reality. You know, it's mainstream science will tell you this. I mean, everybody will tell you this. Everybody knows this. We're only experiencing a very, very small part of reality.
This is the thing, Max. You've actually do know a bit about the science of ayahuasca, and I was actually going to ask you just to keep going in that direction about with the science of ayahuasca.
Well, the thing is, like I said, we only access a small amount of reality. So with ayahuasca, it opens up more of that bandwidth, and we can see outside visible light. You know, you can see what the construct's made of. You can see sometimes, like I said, spirit into the spirit realm and all this sort of stuff. So it gives you access to those higher senses, but at the same time, it gives you access to deep emotional senses as well, that you know, and things about yourself and realizations about yourself, you know, deep knowledge of yourself, so that you're connected to yourself and you're connected to all the people around you. That's why it's important to do it in a room with people in a room as well, like not by yourself, because you develop a connection with the people in the room. A bond develops, you know, a real family bond, and you start to see yourself in these people. And usually people will share experiences as well in ayahuasca. You know, they'll see similar things, they'll have messages for each other and all sorts of stuff. So it's a very connecting thing, and it's great for bonding. And, it's hard to put it all into a nutshell, but, I think it's highly beneficial. I think there's a reason that they don't want people doing it. I think there's a reason that it's banned and that it's called a hallucinogen when it's not. It's sort of classed like something like LSD when it's really something very different.
Well, there's a serious responsibility to carry on the lineage, which is exactly what probably another of the prongs, that for the reason that the shamans are bringing it, you know, because rather than let it go extinct, they're going to, you know, spread it, and it will find its future shamans.
Well, it's just preserving the knowledge as well.
That's what I mean.
If this knowledge is lost, then it's never going to be found again. It'll be very hard for it to be found again. Mm. And that's another thing that the people here are doing, is they've got a multi-language school, because all the people have been converted to, you know, everyone's got to learn to speak Spanish and become modern, you know. So we're making sure that there's a Shipibo section in the school, so that all the native culture is preserved and all the native traditional culture is taught in the school as well as the modern ways. So they're trying to marry the modern world and the modern world's not going away, let's face it, but trying to marry the knowledge together. You know, marry the past with the present to create a revival future. That seems to be the best way. And we're trying to make sure the culture gets preserved, you know, and not abused. Because there is a lot of neo-shamanism. There's a lot of people, like I said, coming in, profiteering, ayahuasca tourism, all that sort of stuff. And we're trying to keep it real and be as supportive as we can to the community.
What's the name of your community, Max?
The place that I don't actually live there, but the place that I frequent is called Namayakalap. It's in a place called Pucallpa. And it's right on the edge of town. It's, you know, under the flight path. You got a bit of town noise and a few things like that. There's other places out in jungle, which will give you a more jungle experience, but they're very production line, the ones that I've been to, and they just don't have this heart. There's just this heart here. And the beauty of this as well, I mean, is that it is right on the edge of town. And like I've always said, you know, if you're going to build an alternate community, if you're going to do permaculture, or you're going to try to make a difference, there's no really building an alternate community that's isolated. You need to be making ripples in the larger community, in the greater community. And that's what they've done here. They've got this on the edge of town. They're supplying water to all the bottom end of the street here, all the local neighbors, and they've got all these local people working here and supplying them, you know, with above award wages. And, you know, they're doing MMS upriver and healing people of all these diseases and stuff with MMS. So they're doing a lot of work in the community here and getting them involved in the center and helping them realize the importance of preserving this culture as well, you know. So it's a good thing that they're doing, you know.
What do you think, Sherry?
Well, I think it's fascinating that it's coming out at this time, because it seems like there is a lot of transition on the planet. And I can really appreciate this space of allowing people to purge or move out of a space that they've been stuck in. Do you think that there is a vibration or there is something happening on the planet that is pushing this, not just in the ayahuasca, but overall? Because it seems like it's coming up in all different directions.
Yeah, look, the energies are really weird at the moment. There's so much being revealed and everything's so convoluted. It's like everything's speeding up at the moment. And so, I don't know, yeah. Anybody's guess where we're going to be by the end of the year, but it's just like reality's leapfrogging over itself, you know. Are you finding that in your life, that there's just things being revealed all over the place and it's just wild. It's really, really hard to keep, I don't know, I'm finding there's all sorts of influences and all sorts of instability. It's really hard to maintain stability.
Yeah.
You know, everything's sort of scattered at the moment. You want to react. Like, year of the monkey, of course, monkey mind, monkey brain. And I'm as bad as anybody else for that. I've been completely overreacting, but that's just the way
just
it
recently?
Is.
Just recently? Wait, Max. So has it been just, so like, I mean, seriously, like I had a couple of days, like last week, and then I had a couple of days this week where I was crazier than usual. I mean, I had weird spouts of anger, and I had weird spouts of, like, just unrealistic emotion. I mean, it was crazy, and that is so not usually, well, not that I'm not. I am dramatic, but it was way far on the other side. Is that kind of how you, like, you feel like you're kind of getting hit with weird?
Well, that's the way, in the last couple of weeks, like almost everybody I know has been going through similar things. Just this really, really up and down, convoluted stuff. And you don't know whether you're coming or going half the time. It's like reality, like you're shifting in and out of realities almost. It's really weird. Really, really weird. So I've had to do a lot of grounding in the last few days. I'm taking a few weeks off the show. And I'm going to try to knock the shows down to once a month and try to focus on the films. But I've just been really scattered and
me
a
too.
Lot of people that I know have. So
yeah.
Something strange is going on. I don't know. Maybe it's the chemtrails. Maybe they're switching the smart grid. I don't know. But I'm in the Amazon. I mean, I should be fine here. It's weird. So.
Well, I'm sure there's enough oxygen coming out of those leaves all around you.
Go ahead.
You're gone.
Well, I'm fascinated. Okay, so here's the thing with me is that I feel like I've been riding this roller coaster. Like I'm in a deeper consciousness. Like I'm more of a witness, but I'm still somehow floating through the roller coaster. And it's even though, it seems like it's just happening more quickly. The patterns that I experience that I seem to be stuck in, even though they're coming to the consciousness now, you know, where before maybe it would only happen when there were certain events or certain triggers or whatever it was. Now it's like boom, 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 just right in my face, everything.
I think a lot of this, I mean, I think you're going to see more of it. I think it's going to speed up even more. It's going to get more chaotic. The trick is to just be aware of it. I've been able to really ground myself in the last few days, which has been good. I've sort of stepped away from the net and just sort of had time out in the forest here, and it's been good. And I think you're going to see more of it. But
I think it is
to help us break out of these patterns, to stop reacting in ways that we normally react. You know,
yeah,
because it's all predictable. You what?
What is it that creates it? I mean, to say, when you say to
we,
help us
we
break
create
out,
it, I think.
Yeah, but what brings the energy
I think,
at this point in time?
Well, it's
we
just that point in time. I mean, a lot of people would call this the time of the apocalypse, the time of the great revealing, the time the veils are being lifted.
It's the time of the apocalypse now.
Well, that's what it would. Well, people don't understand what the word apocalypse means. It means revealing.
Yeah.
It means
right. Lifting
the veil, you know, opening the window, opening the curtain, seeing what's behind the curtain. You know, and yeah, it's gonna be a slow opening, but it's gonna be a dramatic opening.
Is it happening now?
We react in ways that we normally do, and I think you know things are gonna keep jumping in your face. You're gonna keep reacting to them until you suddenly realize that, hang on, I'm reacting. I'm reacting because you didn't pick it up the first time. Oh, here's another. Oh, here's another. Here's another. You're getting it yet. Stop reacting. You know, start. Calm down. So reality kind of does that. If you start reacting, it keeps throwing it in your face. So I think we're just seeing more and more of that with everybody, including myself. And it gets to a point where, you know, you get so preoccupied with life and so preoccupied with other things, you don't realize how much you're reacting. And then you step back and go, hang on a minute. what just happened there, you know? So, well, I think that's happening with a lot of people. So we're going to see more of it. I think it's going to get more and more. I mean, look at the world. Look what's going on in the world. We're going to see more and more of it happening. So it's time we really started to become aware of it and notice how we're reacting and trying to maybe direct that energy into some positive action to maybe change the direction we're going in, you know?
Do you think that there, okay, so this is a, I think this is a question that is kind of, it's controversial, but I see some aspects of what we're talking about, and I see a lot of people, even people that you maybe wouldn't expect, asking questions, at least if nothing else, asking questions. Yeah. And that's very important. But the other side of it that I do see is that you've got another whole group of individuals that are, instead of actually taking any responsibility, they're just really playing into the blame game, the, you know, let's choose an enemy, let's, you know, buy into all, like, the election and all these things that are happening in the United States, to me, are such a distraction from what is really here, and it seems like that's something that, I don't know. Is it a small group? Is it the waves? Is it the energy on the planet? Is it coming from other planets? Is it something that we came here to do? Does that have? Do you have answers like this?
Well, who has the answers, darling? Who has the answers? Now, the problem is that, you know, all these movements, they have no real focus. You know, you've got some movement. You've got some great revealing you're trying to show to the world, and you're standing up and shouting about it. What next? I mean, what next? What happens if you have this huge groundswell of people and you're all standing up saying, we want change? You're still looking at the politicians asking them to do it. No one's prepared to act themselves on the ground and start being the change that they want in their own community, because that's where you're going to make a difference, on the ground. You know, we form these movements, we join these movements, and like whatever it is, doesn't matter what movement you join. You know, you join it and you get involved, and you think that by joining the movement you've made a difference, and you're just there getting positive letters from these people and going to the speaking events and buying the DVDs or whatever. But what's actually happening? What change is being made? You know, nothing. You know, because you're not doing it on the ground yourself. People have got to get involved themselves on the ground, and a lot of people just aren't prepared to do that. And that's where the problem lies. So, it's fixing that, you know, realizing that joining some group isn't going to do anything yet unless its aim is positive action on the ground. You know, that's where the difference is going to be.
That's really fascinating you say that. And it so much relates to your belief that people need to address the legislation that allows them to do it.
Is that, I mean, I guess, and here's my question with that as well, because I have a lot of conflict going on in my own mind about the legal system. Because there's one part of me that feels like, you know, I should stand up and give people advice or tell them, you know, the rules. It's not really advice. It's just, once somebody knows the rules, they can make choices for themselves. So I feel like that I have some weird obligation to that. But then when I really start to look at the whole system and I look at anybody who's involved or anything that's going on with it, we truly, if you would give them 1 ounce of energy, we are feeding a system that is destroying our population. I mean, the judicial system is now incorporated into a corporation of slavery.
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, and the best thing you can really do with the legal system is expose its corruption, you know. You know, try using it against itself, but not with the hope of getting any remedy, because you're never going to get any remedy from within that system. But if you can use the system against itself in a way to expose it, well, that may help, you know. Because the fact is, there is no real law on this earth, because if there was law on this earth that was valid or real, that would apply to everybody evenly across the board, and it isn't applied evenly. If it was applied evenly, all the politicians that are in power at the moment would all be in jail under their own law. And the fact that they're not shows that the law is not applied evenly, so there is no real law. What there is one set of rules for us and another set of rules for politicians who somehow believe that they are worth more than other people because they're the ones who make the rules. You know, but really, they're simply people that we appoint to manage things for us. And we've forgotten that. We've let these people put us into a state of fear and become, you know, what we believe to be rulers. But no, I mean, all this fear of terrorism and all the stuff that we need the government to protect us, it's rubbish. It's the government's creating all the problems. It's just protection racket, the whole thing. You know, they're the ones who create all the problems so that we need more police to protect us from the government's, the problems the government create. The whole thing's a scam. And people need to wake up to that. But, you know,
right.
Like I said, there's no point joining these groups and thinking you're going to make a difference. People have to get involved on the ground. Like if you've got some legislation coming in, you know, new parking meters coming in, that whatever, you know, why don't you go to the council and say, well, what makes this valid that you can put these in? You know,
yeah.
And start looking at the stuff they've done, looking at what they support. You know, are you supporting the state of Israel, which is in breach of Article 33 of the Fourth Geneva Convention, which makes you guilty of supporting war crimes personally, by your own personal support for this state. So if you can be found guilty of war crimes, what makes the legislation you're enacting valid? You know, what makes that valid? And it can be shown that you're in breach of, you know, you're supporting war crimes. So why aren't you in jail? Because if the law was applied evenly, you would be in jail. And the fact that it isn't applied evenly indicates that there is no law on this planet. Now, why don't you go and say that to your council member and see how they take it and see how the people in the community react to it as well. And you can say that in a way saying, no, I'm not against Israel. What I'm saying is that there must be law. And if there isn't this law, then where is it? I mean, if the Geneva Convention isn't to be held by, and if international law isn't to be held by, and if local law, which says we can't support war crimes, isn't to be held by, then how is any of this law valid? You know?
Yep.
How is any, you know, you just seem to be ignoring the fact that you appear to be a war criminal. So how is your legislation valid? Please show cause why you shouldn't be charged with war crimes and why we shouldn't question, you know, roll back all of this invalid legislation. In fact, why your entire government shouldn't be dismissed for your open support of these war crimes. You know, please show cause how you shouldn't be prosecuted under your own law for even attempting to do what you're doing, which we consider to be an abuse of office. Go and set to your politicians and see how they take it. Yeah, they haven't got anywhere to go from that sort of a thing. And that's the approach that people need to have. They've got to realize they're dealing with people here. These aren't your rulers. These aren't people who control you. They're just guys in fancy suits and big cars who've been stealing a lot of money from you and bombing countries around the world and destroying this earth. And it's time we called them out for it. But people have to develop a pair and be prepared to stand up in their community and call this, you know. We start doing that and we'll start seeing some difference. We'll start creating ripples in the community, you know.
Yeah, you tell him, Max. But it's really true. And in terms of talking to your local council, like, people always complain about the councillors and they go, oh, the councillors, they don't do anything. And I say to them, well, tell them to do something. Like, actually, just this week, we turned the whole homeless thing around. We suddenly realised that we've got homeless people in this town and that we actually have to do something about it. And now the council's having a meeting and all sorts of people have got involved, and it's been in – other people have rung the newspaper, and this has become a big thing. And it's all because I put a Facebook post up saying, did you – on the community grapevine, the Dalesford Community Grapevine – did you know that we've got homeless people in our town? And people were writing back going, wake up, where were you born? You know, like, where have you been sleeping? And but anyway, it eventually became a good conversation and the councillors started responding to it. And then the CEO came up to me and he said, thank you for bringing – I've been following that thread on the, you know, on the local grapevine. And thank you for bringing homelessness to my attention, and we're going to do something about it. And I said, well, there must be sort of funding and stuff. You know, this is what happens when you talk to the CEO of your council. And I said, there must be funding for different things. And he said, yes. And I said, and that building that you were thinking of selling, that would make a very good hostel. And he said, what a brilliant idea, and went running off. I don't know whether he was going to do anything about it, but another councillor sent me a letter just a couple of days ago saying the meeting's this following Tuesday, so please make sure you get in the request to council, to ask council to do the research, because that's what you have to do. The council needs you as the, whatever you are, the local, to ask the council to work for you. Max, thanks for this. I think I can hear some music.
Yes, we're getting ready to take a break here for a few minutes. Thank you, everyone, for sticking with us. We'll be back in a few minutes here with Max Egan, American Freedom Radio.
We rejoin Sherry and Jillian.
And welcome back to the Green-Eyed Monsters. So before we took that break, we were talking with Max Egan. Jillian and I have had a lot of questions and kind of moving into different directions, and now moving into civil disobedience, which was something that we've talked about with some other guests on this show. Max, I'd love to hear your opinion on that.
Well, I think it's imperative. Civil disobedience is necessary for democracy to function. You know, civil disobedience is really the only way to really move things forward. You know, the problem with our system is that the law simply isn't applied evenly. It isn't applied to politicians. It isn't applied to the people it should be applied to, which indicates there is no real law. And so what do you do in that sort of a situation? The only method you've got really left is civil disobedience. You just simply have to stop complying with the system. You know, you're never going to find any remedy within the system. You're just not, because it's not applied evenly. You know, the system isn't interested in justice. It's interested in points of law. And we don't need any more law that's going to be attempt to fix anything. We need the repeal of a lot of the laws that are put in place, and we need the law that does exist to be applied evenly, or we need an admission that there is no law on this earth. And really, there is no law, because it isn't applied evenly. If there was law that functioned, the world would not be in the state that it's in, you know.
Sometimes you could actually write, according to my idea we were talking about in the break, you could actually write a local law or a bill, or, you know, municipal law, that actually is in complete conflict to the corporate law, and then you create a jurisdictional conflict, and that in itself is one way of having the argument that that law shouldn't exist.
Well, yeah, that's one way to do it, but by even doing that, you're playing within the parameters of the system, and you're playing by their rules. You know, the deck's stacked. You know, the deck is stacked straight away. And even if you're trying to do that, trying to bring in laws for your local council, it'll be an interesting thing to see, because all local councils in Australia get their directives from the municipality association.
Exactly.
The Municipality Association gets its orders directly from the United Nations under Agenda 21.
It's incredible.
And you've got an organization in the United States which is the same. I don't know what it's called, but it's the same as the Australian Municipality Association that gets its directives directly from the United Nations. So while we're all focusing on a new president or a new prime minister or a new whatever, you know, what's going on the local level is where all the changes that affect you on a personal level are taking place. So that's where you need to address it. And you need to realize that the United Nations has come into the country and they're undermining our society from within, from the local council level through the municipality association. So we need to challenge all of these directives, all of them, because none of them are serving the people. You know, rather than putting in a law, bringing in a new law, which is going to, you know, stop these corporations, you know, hold them a little bit more, give them a little bit more accountability or something, what we need to do is to realize that these corporations do not have the rights of people. They should not have ever been given the rights of people. Those laws need to be repealed, and any corporation that's found to be causing harm, injury, or death needs to have its charter immediately revoked and held accountable and made to pay compensation for what it's done and to rectify the problems it's created. We don't need fines and all this sort of stuff. You know, a corporation does some environmental damage, they get some billion-dollar fine. Well, what difference does that make if they've made $10 billion on what they did? They did it so that they'd get the $1 billion fine. It's cheaper than paying the $3 billion to the safety measures. You know, so we've got a system in place that encourages environmental pollution, encourages the corporate destruction of this world, and we need to repeal it. We need to understand that these are not valid laws. They don't serve anybody. How does this serve anybody? You know, how does this society, if it's destroying our environment, serve anybody? It's ridiculous, you know, and we think that we've got to go through all these points of law and do this and create new laws to do this and do that. Rubbish. What we've got to realize is that there is no law, because the law is not applied evenly, and we have to stand up and call it out and realize that this is our earth, this is our home, this is our environment, these are our gardens, these are things we want, and we don't employ government to destroy the place and bomb people and start wars and destroy everything, destroy the groundwater, all the stuff they're doing. We simply don't employ these people to do this. And the problem is that we believe their legislation is real, and so we're the ones that are doing it to ourselves, because we don't ever stand up and simply ask that the law be applied evenly, or that we admit that there is no law. And that's what we need to do.
Do you think that what we're seeing on the outside is a reflection of what our society is holding, or do you think it's a projection of what the elite are trying to manifest?
What do you mean? Can you rephrase that question?
So when you look at society and you look at the government systems, mm-hmm. and how everything is run and how society is interacting, and then you look at individuals, I have curiosity as to whether or not the things we are seeing are simply a reflection of ourselves, right? Like
they're a reflection of our disempowerment. They're a reflection of our unwillingness to face ourselves and our need to look for leaders in others, look for guidance in others. You know, it's like we're desperate to give our power away. You know, we're pleading to please take my power. Please, you fix the problem. I'll follow anybody who's going to fix the problem as long as I don't have to do anything about it. You know, I'll join whatever movement has the best looking hero that I reckon's going to do it.
So lazy. And this is where I get in trouble on this show because I start saying that they have to stop being so lazy. It's like it's not about. It's like everybody's thinking.
Well, it's fear. It's not just laziness. It's fear. People are terrified of actually stepping into their power and standing up and calling things out for what they are. They're terrified of actually believing that they have to do that. That they can't just join some group that's going to save things for them. They can't just vote in a new face on the coin. You know, people are terrified of that. So that's where the
religion
lies. You know.
Where does religion come in on this, do you think? Do you think that that's another – because I'll tell you that what I'm seeing is that when all of these things start to hit people and their emotions start to come up, whatever the fear base is that is there, seems to fall back into their original, I guess, indoctrination, in my opinion, and I'm not sure that that's really true or fair for me to say, but it's like people who know about Catholicism, who understand completely that it's not what it has been perceived in any way, fall back into it all of a sudden.
Look, I know I'll get a lot of hate mail for saying it, but I think religion is a huge part of the control grid, and it fascinates me. It truly fascinates me how people can see how everything is corrupted. Nothing is what you're told. You know, history is completely different to what we're told. Everything that you're told is completely wrong. They lie to us on all counts, and yet people just don't question the Bible. They don't question religion. And religion is a huge part of the control grid. And unfortunately, like I said, the Christians are just utterly desperate to throw their power away. They're absolutely desperate for someone else to step in and save them. They are so fearful of admitting that they have any power to do anything. They are so desperate to believe that they are flawed, they are sinners, they cannot make a difference at all
on
their own.
Hang on a minute. There
must
some
be
Christians.
This book, you know.
There's some
I don't
Christians
know. They just seem,
like that.
Well, most of the ones that I found just are desperate to be disempowered.
Yeah, you're right.
They're desperate
most
for Christ to come back and do it for them. All they have to do is believe that this person is coming and he's going to come. But they could actually make a difference by using the teachings that that person gave and applying them to their own lives and becoming like that person themselves and just standing up against the system and saying, no, enough is enough, calling a spade and realizing they're just dealing with people. All these suits and stuff, these are just people. You know, they're not anybody to fear. They're just politicians. They're nothing that we have to fear. Yeah, but people are scared of doing that, and unfortunately Christians are right up there with that. I mean, I think religion's all part of the control grid. I really think it is. I think that religions are designed to keep people against each other, keep people in argument, keep people in war, keep people in suffering. I don't think there's anything good can come from any of them unless people see the basic seed that is supposed to be there in all of them, which is love and understanding and compassion and maybe if we just looked at those three bits and put them into place, maybe all the rest would fall into place around it. But, I mean, I think that they're just part of the control grid, personally. I think all religion has a lot to answer for.
Well, and I think it's fascinating that you said, you know, like trying to have somebody come in and save you. Right, I mean, that is the whole idea, and I have this really controversial conversation about how, you know, everybody's saying, well, if you, you know, you come to this planet and you're a sinner, but Jesus Christ, he died for your sins, so it doesn't matter what you do, you're cool, you're going to heaven.
I love your
and,
voice.
Well, I can't stand that shit, because that's the kind of stuff that makes me insane. It's like, that's what makes me not like Christians. And I know that's a very prejudiced, mean remark, but it's like, that's the kind of stuff to me. It's like, how can you look at this planet and not get that you have to take some type of responsibility? Because if we don't, again, where have we been going? We've been letting the government run everything. We've been handing it over for so long that we don't even know the difference, and it's completely screwed up.
Well, it is. I mean, it's not really screwed up. It's working fine according to what they want to do. But yeah, we're all stuck in protection racket.
Ooh,
we're stuck in this protection. Yeah.
You said this wonderful thing that
what?
I remember. If only I could find it. You talked about some law that was made in 1930s to do with this protection racket you're speaking of. This racket we've locked in.
The Kalergi plan. Now, that's something completely different. The Kalergi plan is a plan that was put forth by Zionists in the 1930s. Actually, 1928, I think it came out.
Mm.
And Coldenhove Kalergi plan, and that talks about the mass genocide of the people of Europe via mass migration, which is what we're seeing in Europe now. That plan was put forth back in 1928, where they planned to basically have a massive influx of Arabs and Muslims and Africans and stuff into Europe to break down European society, which is exactly what they were saying. So, yeah. That's on my website, actually. If people want to know what's going on in Europe now, that's all there in that document on the website, the Kalergi plan.
Sorry, Sherry, did I just pull him right off topic?
No, it was fine. That was completely fine. I think that this has a lot to do with, I guess, the breakdown of what I was really asking is more about, do you think that that people are in consent and literally creating, like, direct manifestation, or is it more manipulated, you know, more manipulation by indoctrination and the things going on socially on the planet? But also, like, you know, you're talking about these tribal leaders using tones and vibration. Well, what about, I mean, I've heard a lot of things. I'm not saying that they're all true, but I'm saying, you know, I've been told that we're getting hit in all areas of the planet with different vibrations to make people have different emotions and to influence in different directions and all of these things that kind of add up to the survival of the elite, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, look at what they've done to music. I mean, there's tonal vibrations. I mean, how often have you been really happy sitting in your car and you turn on the radio and some sad love song comes on and by the end of the song you're in tears, you know? You think, oh, it's such a beautiful song. Well, hang on, it's changed all your energy to something you feel really sad now and you felt really happy before. Why is it a good song, you know?
Yeah.
So think about these sorts of things, you know? We sort of relish these emotions. But what I was saying before is that we're stuck in this kind of protection racket. Where, you know, like you look at what's going on at the moment in the Middle East, all these wars that are being funded via your tax dollars, and you think, well, hang on, I can't stop paying taxes because I'll get in trouble with the government, I might go to jail, they might hurt me. So I'm going to pay this money that they use to kill other people, and I'm okay with killing other people as long as I don't get hurt. So you're paying protection money to kill other people, and you're okay with other people being killed. You just turn a blind eye. Oh, I can't stop paying my taxes. I have to pay taxes because I don't want to get hurt, and it doesn't matter if people die because of it. until we can break ourselves out of that attitude and realize that there is no reason for any war to be fought on this earth. Wars are fought by politicians. It's a chess game. There's no country that wants to come and invade your country. There might be some government that wants to talk their people into doing it, and those people need to wake up to the fact that they're being played by a psychopath as well. We need to wake up to the fact that we're being played by psychopaths. This is a chess game. All these people work together. There are no good guys or bad guys. There are no good countries or bad countries. There's just people who are being played, and it's this massive depopulation agenda. That's what all these wars are about. You know, it isn't even really vying for ground or resources that much. It's more about depopulation. That's what the Kalugi plan's about. It's about depopulation. That's what the vaccines are about. That's what the chemtrails are about. That's what all the GM foods are about. That's what the whole agenda to, you know, to everything. It's all about depopulation, everything they're doing. You know, they're clearing this earth of carbon life as quickly as they can. You know, and what's carbon life? We want a carbon zero environment. We're carbon based life forms, you know, for God's sake. Why do we want a carbon zero environment, you know?
I only read yesterday that GMO's major aim, this is just what I read, was to cause third generation sterility.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All animals that they've tested GM food on causes sterility within three generations. You know, the second generation is usually a bit stunted, a bit dumb. The second generation is usually unable to produce. So it's about depopulation. Of course it is. That's what the GM food's for.
I couldn't believe that. I mean, I went doing because I had read for years that it caused sterility.
Well, I mentioned it back in my film Transformation that I put out in 2012 that it causes sterility.
I mean, oh, my God, that reminds us, we've got to talk about your film, too. We've got to talk about your film, but keep on the sterility of GMOs. That's shocking.
Well, yeah, there's been reports out there for a long time. I mean, there's the reports, if you look through the archives on my website, thecrowhouse.com, go and look through some of the archives and just look GMO or look up sterility. Just put it in the find section on your browser and just search the page for those sorts of keywords. You'll find all sorts of articles there on what this does. And it's worked in all tests. I mean, everything they've tested it on causes sterility. It causes all sorts of problems. It's been banned in a lot of countries, GMO food. But, of course, it's not even labelled in our countries because we're smarter than that. We don't care what those Europeans think. Oh, they're just silly. We're Australians. We can do better than that. Yeah. Same in the United States.
We want some.
That's unbelievable, you know, the stuff that Malcolm Turnbull pushes on the people, you know.
But the Outback Aussie male, you know, like we used to rub Deodorant on our fly-blown sheep, right? Like I'd just have a bottle of Deodorant, just pour it, rub it all over the sheep's rump.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, great
with
for
with my bare hands. Never wash it off, you know. And then I remember one day there was this man and he actually stirred a 44-gallon drum full of sheep dip with his arm. And he had his sandwich on the lid of the 44-gallon drum. Like, you know, we just took on all the poisons. Oh, just a bit of, you know, DDT, no problem.
Yeah, it's good for you.
Yeah, toughen you up.
So do you think that when you're talking about depopulation, I mean, when you look at the planet... And you look at some of the things that are going on, and I'm not talking about the communities that are trying to make a difference or moving forward or this and that. I'm talking about the riots and the people that are battling over Trump and Hillary. I mean, all of these ridiculous, to me, the lowest vibration possible, just emulating in certain areas on this planet. I mean, what is your opinion of that? Do they get lifted or do they get to go away? Do you know what I'm saying?
You've got to look at this. I mean, it's the wrong approach. What's rioting going to do? You know, people have got, I mean, say if you have this big march and you all march on, you know, the White House and you're all there and now you're at the White House. Well, now what? What are you going to do? You're going to go in there and pull them down and take them out and lynch them and put new people in place and think, okay, now you save me. I mean, what's the plan? You know, what's the plan? I mean, why not just stay home? And stop complying with the system. Stop going along with it. Stop paying your taxes. Stop spending money. Stop contributing to any industry that causes harm, injury, or death. Throw your televisions out the window. Pull your kids out of school. Start homeschooling them. If the whole community does it, what can they do? What can anybody do? You're not breaking any laws if you don't go to work, if you don't use your credit card, if you refuse to use your credit card, or cut your credit cards in half and say you all want to decided to go back to cash tomorrow. What do they do? They can't do anything if we just decide to not comply with it. That's the best form of protest. Go and grow a garden and stop complying with the system and spend a week home with your family. Everybody, take a week off. I'm actually trying to organize a worldwide strike for April 15th next year. We can call it the day the earth stood still. When nobody spends any money whatsoever, you know, just stay home, don't spend anything, don't go out, don't watch television, don't buy newspapers, don't send your kids to school, don't go to work.
Don't use electricity.
Just stay home with your family for the day, you know.
Look, I just have to say again and again and again, I really, having just touched on GMO foods, how important it is to grow your own vegetables.
Well, it is. I mean, it is if you can. I mean, what you can, or even if you live in an apartment block, you can grow one vegetable maybe in each apartment and all share with each other, you know. So there's ways of doing things. Yeah, it is important that we do that sort of stuff.
But we've got to
find ways of stepping away from the system and not complying with this system, and ways of taking action on the ground, you know.
The thing about that I think is interesting is that, so I do a lot of my own growing. I mean, I grow so many crazy things that
she thought that her sunflower was a magic beanstalk.
I really did want it to be, and it came out of the ground. So I'm not gonna, like, Max, it's seriously, like, I had dropped them last year and I had forgotten about it, and they came out of the concrete, and they are seriously like 2 inches thick around, and they are 14 feet high. They are the most amazing, and I thought they were a bean, and I was telling Jillian that they were like the magic beanstalk, like I was gonna like climb up there or something. And then she goes, go to the other side, and I go to the other side, and there's a big sunflower. I was like, shit.
It was really funny. She took me with her camera outside to see her amazing bean. And I was looking and looking and looking, and I'm thinking, God, that's fucking Jack and the Beanstalk's bean. And then I noticed this little sunflower flower that hadn't broken out in color yet. And I said, I think it's a sunflower. It was very funny.
But then they grew. I mean, seriously, the sunflowers are 14 feet high. I mean, that's off the chart anyway.
They're enormous.
They're huge. It's just amazing. And then my garden is so weird, though, because it's like nothing else really hit this year. It got so hot that everything was just somewhat stunted. And I'm almost feeling like that I might be better off doing a lot of this growing inside. Maybe, I mean, when we're talking about chemtrails and all this stuff, I mean, how much effect does that have on our personal gardens? I mean, how much protection do we have to do? Do we have to be paranoid, you know, because they are doing it?
The chemtrails are a really difficult thing to wake people up to, and there's a really, really dark agenda behind the chemtrails. And it's a weird thing, because it's something that's in everybody's face, and people are in such incredible denial of it. It's amazing. It's amazing. But the skies are different now. The skies are very, very different now to what they used to be. And they're changing the sky. They're changing the light. You know, a lot of people say, oh, they're doing it to protect us from global warming. Global warming's a myth. There is no global warming, the carbon, you know, climate change, all this stuff. It's rubbish. It's not true. It's a UN agenda. And again, it's about depopulation. That's what it's about. You know, they're changing the light. They're changing the light that exists in the daytime. And this has had an effect on crops, having an effect on everything, because, light does that.
My corn, so I have these 14-foot sunflowers, and my corn is seriously like 2.5 feet high. Ooh, do you hear that?
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, maybe the sunflowers. So did you say it came up through the sidewalk or something? You dropped it a couple of years ago or a year ago?
I dropped them last fall when I harvested the sunflowers that I had planted on the other side. I had dropped them down in the cracks of the like I have one of those, you know, like a concrete patio, but it's like brick, you know. And it dropped down in between the bricks, and they grew out of there. And it's like it separated the bricks out. It was so thick and huge.
That'd be why it's so big, because it's had to grow in such a harsh environment. It's had to push its way through, and it needed the strength to do it. So, you know.
Ooh, that's kind of cool in a lot of ways.
Well, Mother Nature can develop super strength when it needs to. You know, things are going to grow. Things are going to do what they want to do, you know.
Like us, right? I mean, don't you think that that's part of what's happening? That's part of, I mean, that's why I think I'm so interested in ayahuasca. It's not about going and having some great connection with spirit, because I feel like I have a lot of that, whether it's ego or whatever it is that I have. But it's more the purging, the release of the hold within us that is a hand down generationally that maybe we do or don't understand, and all of those types of things are what's going through my mind. And so that's why I was asking more about like the reflection, because it seems like so many of the people that I work with, they have the exact same, like if you took the government and broke it down into a family unit, that's exactly what people are living.
Well, yeah. Yeah, but you know, again, it's people giving their power away is a real problem with that system. You know, I need to be controlled. I need to have someone else do it for us. I mean, I think a lot of that is the fluoride and GM food and stuff. People really aren't thinking clearly. It's really hard for people to get things organized. You know, even if they're doing little tasks, little managerial tasks, you know, you need a few people to do it. I mean, there's some people that are really switched on that can do it, but a lot of people just find it hard to get things together these days. You know, I think that there's a lot of toxins in the diets and in the fluoride and in the air that are just causing people to be a little bit disconnected and a little bit scattered in their actions, a little bit reactionary. You know, I think there's all sorts of things that are going on to influence us. So, you know, it's important that people connect with their community. I've been saying this for years. It's really important that people develop these relationships on the ground and start taking the action there. And non-compliance has really got to be the way, I think. I think that's going to be the only way that we're going to make any difference from this system. Because it doesn't matter what movement you're involved in. You know, even if you wake everybody up to it, what then? Everybody's still just turning to the government and says, okay, now we know, fix it. Well, that's not going to work. You know, we have to fix it ourselves. So in a way, things are a reflection of us, but it's a reflection of our unwillingness to be who we are. Unwillingness to admit who we are, and unwillingness to admit our own power, and unwillingness to admit that we don't need rulers, we don't need leaders. What we need is integrity, you know. Now, humankind is, we have so much potential, we really do, and everybody has incredible creative potential. And if we had a cooperative society and we were free to express our potential and be who we are, we could create an incredible reality. We really could, you know. And everything that's going wrong with this world is due to our willingness to follow rules that we know are unjust and that don't serve us and that don't serve the people. You know, they bring in legislation saying we've got to have the GM food, we've got to have the fluoride, we just go, oh my God, it's law now, so we have to do it. Why? Why don't we just say no? You know, why don't we just say no? We don't want this. Didn't you listen to us? We said we don't want it. What are you still doing in office thinking you can do this? Because we just said we didn't want it. We don't care what your grand plan is, you know? Because our grand plan is to survive, and we know this stuff you're putting in our food is shit, and we don't want it there. That's it. End of story. Bye. You know? What's wrong with us? Why don't we just say that, you know?
Because so, too many people – see, this is where I get – and this is where I was questioning how many people are really evolving, because I just had a huge argument last week with a group of people over fluoride. Like, this woman actually says to me that – it's the best thing that's happened in America because now we have good teeth.
Rubbish. Hand her a copy of The Lancet. The latest copy of The Lancet's the most peer-reviewed medical journal on earth, where fluoride has just been declared a neurotoxin in the latest edition of The Lancet.
I love that. I love that. I wrote that in my notes. I love that.
Show that.
I am going to.
And she's going to agree with the medical industry and think it's so good. Well, guess what? The medical industry says that this stuff's really bad and you shouldn't be putting it in your food because it doesn't help your teeth. What it does is make you da-da. So,
exactly.
You know.
And not only, I mean, the calcification, and this is something else. And I was going to – so when we're talking about water rights and all these other things, now I've heard from all different sources that the water on the planet right now is pretty much dead. And well, I had – go ahead.
Well, water in towns is. I mean, there's still places where you can get live water, but they're trying to wipe that out, of course. Countries like Venezuela, you get the most pure water in the world off some of those high mountains and plateaus where it just spontaneously creates in the dewfall in the mornings and flows down in these incredible rivers, and it's highly energized up there. But by the time it gets to the port down the other end of the country, it's completely dead. So...
I guess, and I don't mean to sound ignorant, because I get the chemtrails, I get the toxic waste everywhere, and all these different things with the pollution and the trash and all of that. But to actually say that water is dead is horrifying to me. It's like one of the reasons I don't feel comfortable going really near the ocean, or I don't want to touch it. And it's almost because I don't.
Well, the ocean's different. Ocean's different. I mean, oceans are water. Ocean generates lots of negative ions and all sorts of good stuff anyway, just the waves, you know. So, but what we're talking about when they say water is dead, the water you're getting out of the tap is certainly dead because it's gone through so much processing, gone through all these straight pipes and right angle turns, and it's picked up all the emotion of the people along the way through all the houses and countries and places it's flowed. Well, it does. Well, water remembers. Water has memory. Now, if you've got a plateau where you've got beautiful water being formed, and it goes down a waterfall, it goes through the first town, the second town, the third town. By the time it gets to the end of the river, it's dead.
It's true.
So, but that doesn't mean all water is dead. And even with all the damage that's been done, I mean, the earth will recover. This earth will recover as long as we stop what we're doing now. We need to stop all the mining, stop all these operations. I mean, this earth is being strip mined. Let's face it, it is. It's being depleted to the point that there'll be nothing left and it won't be able to support life. So you've got to wonder what's going on there and who's really in charge of that. And then that might be another reason for the depopulation, you know. What are the underground bases for? These are where people will go, and, you know, the chemtrails will do all their job, all this stuff will do its job, and, you know, they'll be left with the population they got left. But, you know, we can still turn it around. We still can. But we've got to see what's happening and admit that it is happening, and we've got to admit that we have power. Stop waiting to be saved. Stop waiting for a messiah come to put all the bad guys in the big pit of burning fire. You know, it's not going to happen. You know, we're going to put ourselves in the pit of burning fire if we don't wake up to ourselves and stand up and call this, you know.
Yeah. And what's the proof? What do we call out for? Because another huge, I get a ton of slack, is on chemtrails. And, you know, because there's all these different people saying, oh, well, because people don't really understand how clouds are formed or how water evaporates. And so they're like, oh, no, that's just how it comes in different, you know, parts of the atmosphere or this and that. Where can I find information that shows, because I know that I've seen different things and I've heard different things, that there's pilots and there's different people that have said this is happening for real. Like, if you guys, you know, don't get this, you know, everybody's going to experience exactly what you're saying. So where do we find that?
Find what?
Look, there's all sorts of places you can find it. I mean, there's films like What in the World Are They Spraying and stuff that you can give to people, which will show them the fact that they are spraying. There's documents like from the House of Commons on geoengineering and climate remediation that have been tabled, which show that they are spraying. But like, but with all of these things, the problem is that you get lost down a rabbit hole and you're trying to alert people to one symptom of systemic corruption. You know, the chemtrails are one symptom of systemic corruption. You're trying to wake people up to factory farming, how bad it is. It's a terrible, terrible problem. But again, it's one symptom of systemic corruption. Same with the coal seam gas mining, trying to wake people up to that. It's a symptom of systemic corruption. All of these things, you know, the whaling, the pollution of the oceans, the methane that's being released. I mean, so many problems, so many things. And we keep saying, how can I wake people up to this symptom of systemic corruption? We need to be waking them up to the fact that there is systemic corruption and how to address that systemic corruption. We need to find a mechanism that can completely shut the system down immediately. You know, shut the system down and have the perpetrators arrested for their crimes. Because these people are committing crimes against humanity, crimes against the environment, crimes against life itself. Let's face it, have a look at the place. It's a mess. And every problem that we've got is a result of legislation that politicians have put in place, which has allowed this problem to be created. you know. Yes. And we keep trying to put band-aids on symptoms and vote people out, bring in more laws to try to protect things. When what we need to be doing is realizing that the system, it's not even broken. The system is doing exactly what it's designed to do, and that is to put control in the hands of a very small few amount of people and to depopulate all that isn't needed to run the machine. That's what's going on. The place is run by criminals, and we've got to call it. And to me, this is why I keep going back to Palestine, because if law exists on this earth, then every politician supports the State of Israel can be arrested right now under international war crimes, for war crimes under international law and in laws in their own country. So if you want to stop the chemtrails, you need to arrest all the politicians that are allowing it to happen and all the people behind that as well. Anybody who has ever supported or funded this state, you arrest all of these people and you're going to find all these chemtrails stop pretty quick, all these coal seam gas mines stop pretty quick, all this legislation could be rolled back because all these people are provable criminals under their own law. And you can use it that way, and you might even reach the police force. Some of these brain-dead morons in the police force who are so ready to do anything the government tells them, if you can present them with something that demonstrates that the people that are giving them orders are provable war criminals and should be arrested for the good of your nation, then you might find people start breaking ranks. Because we can turn the legal system against itself. And if this law is not to be applied to the politicians, then there is no law. And maybe we'll have a global revolution or something. That's what it'll take. I don't know. But there is some form of legal system here that we could use, which could be used to motivate people if they could just get rid of this whole Islamophobic thing and realize that what I'm talking about here is not supporting Islam or being against Jews. What I'm talking about is law and whether or not it exists. And whether or not it should be applied evenly. That's what I'm talking about.
You're talking about Palestine being the key.
Well, Gaza Strip especially the key, because Gaza Strip is a breach of Article 33 of the Fourth Geneva Convention. And that is an open breach of international law. It's a war crime. It's not even a debatable point. So every politician who supports it is a war criminal under international law. And you'll find that we've got laws in Australia saying you can't fund or support war crimes. And Malcolm Turnbull has said that he openly supports Israel, so he's a war criminal by his own admission. How is any of the law he's enacting valid?
There's a paper that you said that every politician at some treaty, and I think it starts with the letter A.
In the United States, every politician has signed the APAC pledge, which pledges allegiance to the State of Israel. Every politician you'll find in office in the United States has signed that pledge, which means they pledge allegiance to a foreign power for a start. So why are they even in office in the United States? And the foreign power they pledge allegiance to is committing open war crimes. So what makes any of the legislation they're enacting in the United States valid under their own law? How is it valid if you're a provable war criminal, which you are simply because you signed this pledge and this country's in breach of Article 33? It's as simple as that. We don't even need a jury for this. It's an open and shut case.
But that's not, if you look at what's going on with Hillary right now before the election, supposedly, I mean, it's all over the media, and, you know, the WikiLeaks new leak is that, you know, these emails and all of these things, which I've questioned 100 times, well, who are they going to, because that's never mentioned, right? They talk about all these emails, but nobody ever says who they actually went to. All of a sudden, that's coming out, and it's showing that, and they're saying that it has proof, and I'll be honest, I have not looked at the whole thing yet, that she sold weapons to ISIS or whatever this organization is. How is it that that can be leaked, that the common person, even internationally, can know this, and yet she's still being allowed to run for president? I mean, doesn't that show something about society, America, whatever? It's horrifying.
Oh, it's a joke. It's a complete joke. It's how the media is going to play it. You know, they'll try to focus on Julian Assange being a threat to national security and how these leaks shouldn't be allowed to happen and how people are breaking laws internally and all this sort of stuff, and try to shift focus on the fact that people have broken the law by allowing this information. They've broken protocol and all these protocols need to be tightened up and rah, rah, rah. We need to get more responsible people in the office. And, you know, it's the way they play it, you know. But, yeah, she's an open war criminal. Absolutely. I mean, it shows that she funded ISIS. She sold them heavy artillery, all sorts of stuff. Yeah. You know, she is so responsible for what's going on in the Middle East, and she's just been profiteering off the thing for so long. I mean, she's had so many deaths that have happened around her. Anybody who's going to testify against her seems to mysteriously get run down by a random milk truck or something. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, how is that even just... How, that's embarrassing. How
I know, it is. It's absolutely embarrassing. But, I mean, hopefully something will come of it. Hopefully she'll get arrested. I mean, hopefully people will see that this is an absolute joke. I mean, how she is allowed to run for president after these emails have been leaked is beyond me. It should be beyond anyone.
So
but it should demonstrate to people
stupid.
That there is a need for them to stop complying with this system, to realize they're being played. It's a joke. You know, the fact that she's even allowed to run for office shows you how corrupt the system is. And that is the main problem, systemic corruption. And until we address that, it doesn't matter what band-aid you try to put a symptom on. You've got to address the systemic corruption and call this thing out for what it is. And these people are all war criminals. They can all be arrested under their own law. So I say we should stand up and do it. And, you know, all of these governments should be dismissed. Honestly, they should, every single one of them. Anybody who's at war at the moment should be dismissed. Then we can put one international law in place. War is illegal. That's it. Any wars of aggression, that's it. You're gone. You know, and not the people, the ones who started the war, the politicians that are doing these things, you know. If these politicians want to have a war, you know, then they should give them all a hammer, put them in a boxing ring, they can have their war. That's the way it should be.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's fabulous. And I think, you know... It's very interesting to me because being in America and living where I do, there is a lot of Trump support. And either side to me is embarrassing, I'm going to be honest, because even though they both know what to say, they both are using the same campaign managers, and that was very obvious when both females use the same speech and all these other things. Do you see what I'm saying? That it just showed more relation, that they're all the same. There's no difference in these. Hillary and Trump are on the same team, whatever that means. And they're just like, they get to play like what you're saying. You know, it's like them playing checkers or them playing chess or some kind of ridiculous game where they get to dangle out Trump having sex with some child and Hillary doing this. And I mean, just drug through the lowest vibration of everything and humiliation to the country itself, and everybody is still running to the polls.
Well, yeah, and that's what these elections have become, and it's about how much dirt you can get on the other guy. And people, they claw their way as much as they can to the top because they want to rule. I mean, it's a joke. It's an absolute joke. I mean, of course people are going to go for Trump, though. I mean, look... He's so colorful and you're going to look at this and go, well, anybody but who we've had, and maybe this guy isn't bought off because he's a billionaire. So, I mean, with what you've had on offer, of course they're going to go for someone like Trump, but, I mean, he's just as bad. He works for Hillary. They go to parties together. They hang out together. They're just as, they're thick as thieves, these people. They're not enemies at all, you know, so it's all theater for the masses. I mean, I think the main thing he's done is get votes for Hillary. But now all this stuff's come out. Well, maybe that's messed things up there. But it doesn't really matter who gets in place. Whoever gets in place is going to be whoever plays the agenda. And if they don't, well, they'll probably get assassinated or something. You know, that's the way it goes.
And it may be either way. It's like they're setting it up for Hillary to look like she's going to kick it, right? They're talking about her having some kind of brain disease and some other, who knows? I mean, there's all kinds of things that are already, to me, there's soft disclosure. They're telling us what's going to be happening because...
Well, degenerative brain disease, that's a great way to get out of a court case for supplying the world's worst terrorist organization is. And, oh, look, I'm sorry.
Oh,
she's just too incompetent to go to court at the moment. You can see where this is heading, can't you?
You must realize how serious it is. If she's... Is she actually claiming degenerative brain?
No, but I can just imagine. I can just see that. So I can see she'll probably start losing her memory about now, developing a stutter or something, and start appearing at the court case
well,
in a wheelchair
had to
or something.
Upstairs.
I mean,
she had what?
Yeah.
There's a big thing about it right now.
Oh, yeah. You'll find she's going through all sorts of really strange,
she's
really
in trouble.
Quick things. She's going to get in real. She'll be in a wheelchair soon. So she won't be able to speak properly. You know, she won't.
It's funny, but it's not. No, it's really freaking funny, but it's not funny. It's embarrassing. Because the whole thing about it is that you're exactly right, Max. Like, we as the people need to remember who and what we are and stop falling into this. And I guess you're right about it's not really laziness, it's fear. Like, we need to stop being so afraid every day of everything. Because that's what this whole society is based on, right? If you don't follow this rule, if you don't do this, if you don't, you know, when you're driving to work, if you don't follow 25 rules of the road, then you have an opportunity to go to court and pay money. And, I mean, it's like, it's every aspect of our reality here. Why do we keep doing this?
Well, yeah, because we're trained to, darling. That's just what they've done. They've trained us to be good little sheeple. You know, that's what school's all about. School trains you to respect authority. That's its main purpose. Respect authority, don't think it's outside of the box. And it's getting even worse and worse and worse with the education system.
Oh.
You know, don't think outside the box. Don't question anything. Anybody who doesn't think like you do could be a terrorist. Better report it to the police. Anybody who is not respecting authority, well, they might be rebellious. That means they could be about to commit an act of terror. Better report it to the police. Better walk between the lines. You know, we might think you're a terrorist, you know. This is the way it's going. And this is the mentality that's being instilled into people. And people are just trained how to think. So you can't really blame them, but we've got to realize that there's not going to be any remedy from the methods that we've been trying. We've got to come together in some way. We've got to create some sort of unity. Stop arguing about our little rabbit holes in our systems and realize that it's